And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota Clearwater Community Conscious Radio. Hi, I'm Mary Glennie.
And I'm Arlene Engelhart, and we're so glad you're with us this morning. We hope you'll stay with us for the whole hour. Oh, what interesting, but times that I would really like to pass by, at least part of them. It's getting a bit tiresome, I'm sure, for all of you. I know it is for me. But we do want to thank all of you that contributed during the recent fund drive. That was wonderful, the response we had, and thank you so much. If you missed it and haven't made a contribution, you can go to the tip jar on WMNF.org, and we'd be happy to take your donation. Also, did you know that donating your car, boat, or motorcycle to WMNF helps keep the station running? It's an important revenue source for us. Donating is easy. Simply call 1-888-866-3885 or visit WMNFcar.org to schedule your free pickup. And again, thanks for joining us this morning as we have what we hope will be an interesting program for you.
Yeah, and I hope you people are safe out there and dry. And be careful, because if you're lucky enough to be in an area where you haven't been flooded, a lot of areas adjoining you might have been flooded, and there's a lot of debris on the roads. All that needs to be cleared off, and so leave extra time and be careful. The worst is beyond us for right now. Well, at least in terms of rain and weather and wind, but yeah. It just seems, you know, that when you look at Ada and you look at its possible path, which, you know, of all the times we have followed hurricanes down here and tropical depressions, I have never, ever seen any kind of projections like that. And I thought, my word, I thought the whole universe is responding to the chaos. And, you know, the kind of, you wonder sometimes you wonder, you know, what are the neural connections of various people? Because you see how they react, et cetera. And I won't make a comment, but somehow I was comparing that to somebody's brain. And I don't know, but anyway,
and we've been pretty lucky so far.
Oh, no, with storms.
I keep thinking about
poor
the
Louisiana.
People in Louisiana, and I just really feel sorry for how damaged they've been this year. So no, I'm thankful for how lucky we have been.
We are very lucky. We've had some cooler weather, so the generating source, the temperature of the water, which is the real generator, luckily for us, is less than it was. Well, we lucked out, but yes, no. Anyway, with that in mind, it seems like forever the election was.
But that's still going on.
Yeah, and so with that in mind, we're going to be talking to Kim Porteous, and Kim Porteous is the president of Florida chapter now, and we're going to be talking about the election. We're going to be reflecting, you know, on the really very momentous Kamala Harris. You know, this is really a really wonderful moment for women, but particularly I'm thinking for young women, because what you see, you can be. And so I'm very excited about that, but also we're going to be talking, I don't know if we'll have too much time to talk about AOC, but I'm really sorry that she just doesn't have a target on her front and her back, but on all sides. And it really is disturbing that she's gotten so much flack, not only, you know, from the opposition, but from the Democratic Party, that she almost didn't run again. And to me, that would have been a terrible loss if we had lost AOC. But also then Heidi Schreck, she had a great play on Broadway. I don't know if it's still running, but it was for quite a while. What the Constitution means to me. And so what do you know about the Ninth Amendment? Well, it's really very important, women particularly, and any minorities, because anything that wasn't mentioned in the Constitution, that is the penumbra, the shadow, if you will, that you're being brought into. So I don't know if that's really enough. You know, I mean, sometimes you need a little more than a shadow. But anyway, let's put this music on, and we will come back with Kim Porteous. And we will hope this plays, because it's been a little recalcitrant. It has been acting with the weather and everything else, but I'm sure it is. So let's give this a play.
from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the U.S. It's coming through a crack in the wall, on a visionary flood of alcohol, from the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. It's coming from the silence on the dock of the bay, the brave, the bold, the battered, the heart of Chevrolet. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Well, we will hope so. we'll just hope so. But actually, I'm so excited because with us on the phone right now, we have Kim Porteous. And did you hear that little song, little part of the song, Kim, when she was talking yep. about? Hi, Kim, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
Oh, that was great.
Oh, well, and you know that in light of everything that's happening, Kim, you know that actually I think that our democracy needs a thorough recharge, you might say, or perhaps, I think there's an awful lot of good things there to work with. But looking upon this election and with everything that's been happening and the whole thing with the pandemic, this has really been a time. So, number one, Kim, how are you doing? I know COVID personally hit you very hard with your father and your favorite uncle, and then your mother got so ill. So, how are you personally doing?
Oh, thank you. I'm doing well. My dad's birthday was yesterday. It's always a big deal. But my son got married yesterday.
Oh, wow.
So, there was this, that's been 2020. There's the ups and the downs, and there's really not many breaks in between, but I'm doing very well. Thank you. I hope you are too.
Oh, we are. We're hanging in here, and that, and I think that's the biggest thing. When you're watching this, that you know, Biden and Harris won overwhelmingly in terms of the popular vote, but also the electoral votes. Are you hopeful that 45 might decide to exit? I mean, well, how are you seeing it just right now?
Well, I am beginning to have that enough faith in our country and our system to believe that, yes, Joe Biden will become the president in January, and we will not have to work hard to evict the current president. I think he's running a racket right now on his to try to get money from the people who he's inspired to be more misogynistic and more racist, just to help pay his bills as he goes out. So I'm having faith in our country more than I have in a long time overall.
Well, and you know, Kim, I think it's interesting because, you know, I'm sure we've had some scoundrels who have been presidents, not so blatantly scoundrelly, but I think that it really points out, you know, the difficulties, if you will, that you want to be specific enough with a law or with rules, so to speak, that there can be some measures that really relieve what you've passed this regulation for. But quite obviously, a lot of it's kind of with a hand shake and with kind of a consensus, if you will, that people just act in certain ways. And so certainly 45 has really exposed the fallacies in that and the real need for us to look to say, well, wait a minute, that we just assume that this is the way people act normally. But when you see the kind of damage, because we're talking real, real damage that we have suffered, not the least of which literally are so many unnecessary deaths and the possibilities that this is going to be continuing and we really somehow have to find measures to really stop COVID, that I think it presents challenges that we've lucked out maybe, but I think it puts a whole new seriousness to the whole aspect of really what governing means, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I'm from Georgia, so I have to give a big shout out to all of the women led by Stacey Abrams and many others, all of the black women, let me say, and others who flipped that state. And what President, Vice President-elect Harris said about John Lewis's quote about democracy as an active participation. It requires action. Is so critical because we have got to get involved and engaged. Otherwise, we have people like Ron DeSantis who is taking this opportunity of COVID to put us in a state of emergency to give himself powers, not to help the people at all. So you're absolutely right. It is a scary time, but there are a lot of provisions given during emergency situations that are going on right now that that we definitely need to be paying an active participation, active awareness of it, and being able to take action from our homes even during this time right now.
So you're for, oops, Arlene, you go right ahead.
Well, and he's even trying to expand the Stand Your Ground law to cover demonstrations. And demonstrations are protected by the Constitution. So that's really pretty frightening.
Yeah.
We need to speak back.
Yeah, a very basic part of this country, not just a voice in our vote, but in our measure to peacefully protest. This is really important. And yes, this is being, any kind of protest is really too easily being put as disruptive, as dangerous, as, you know, criminal. And I'm noticing this with really alarming reaction. But going back to you being from Georgia, and here we go, Kim, that we realize that Mitch McConnell still stands in the Senate, and we know what this man has done over 20 years, and we know what he's done to the courts. Excuse me. And with Georgia, we've got two Senate seats that are still, you know, to be confirmed one way or the other. And tell me, this says a lot, number one, that if Mitch McConnell and the way he runs the Senate stays in power, we are really kind of being, we're going to be limited what we can do, or at least what we think we can do. And so what are the chances, you being from Georgia, and what Stacey Abrams and, you know, has done there, which I think is just amazing, but a lot of other people other than Stacey, what chances, number one, do you think that they have to bring two Democrats as senators? And what do you think needs to happen? And being from Georgia, I would imagine it's kind of a real careful margin that a lot of outsiders come in that could tick them off and they say, no, we can decide, leave us alone. Or the kind of internal work. And so how are you seeing it being, you know, Georgians?
Well, what I know about the Republicans in Georgia is that they have they've benefited every time from the runoff re-elections, from the elections that are runoff, because it is easier to go out and vote, or there are more Republicans who go out and vote generally. But that's not the case now. We know what's on the line. I mean, we know exactly what the people of Georgia know what they can do. We know that in Florida, we're going to be helping, and we already do. We had now members on the ground helping cure their ballots. We have people ready to go starting next week on the ground to help them get out the vote, make sure that everyone's registered that can be registered, and gets engaged. We have people ready to write postcards from throughout the country, maybe even the world, really, because this is a world issue right now. So I believe we have more excitement and engagement, and because there are so much divisiveness going on right now within the Republican Party as well as the Democratic Party, Trump is not on the ballot, and it's going to be harder for them to get the Trumpites, the people who are just very much focused on Trump only, out to vote, especially if their leader is creating so much drama. So I am feeling good, but that means that we need your listeners to engage, get involved with any organization to help get out the vote there, because it is going to be the most expensive election for Senate, and it's going to be the most important election of 2021. So January 5th, big day. Please get involved somehow.
And again, we're talking to Kim Portis, and she is the president of Florida chapter of NOW, National Organization for Women. And it has been, with Kamala Harris, this is really a big deal, Kim. It really is for all women. And particularly, I'm thinking of young women, you know, and young girls, because, you know, what you can see, you can be. And, you know, with the acceptance speeches that she and Joe gave, when she came out in her white suit, you know, with the white, the suffrage, and you know, we're thinking, this is the 100th anniversary, you know, and of the vote. But we're also thinking, you know, of particularly African-American women and how huge their involvement and their work were to making Kamala in that position. You know, there was just so much history. And so I'm going to put this on by Kamala. I'm going to bring, Arlene, you go ahead, sorry.
Well, just talking about the Georgia election, I thought I'd mention that Georgians have until December 7th to register to vote if they aren't registered, and that would also apply to anyone who discovered that their names were taken off the rolls in the purging. So check it out, make sure you're registered, and if you know anyone in Georgia that just might not, have them be sure to check their status.
Back to Kamala Harris. I'm going to put this on. This is just a little part of her speech, and then let's talk about it a little bit.
Responsible for my presence here today, my mother, Shyamala Gopalan Harris, who is always in our hearts. When she came here from India at the age of 19, she maybe didn't quite imagine this moment, but she believed so deeply in an America where a moment like this is possible. And so I am thinking about her and about the generations of women, Black women, Asian, white, Latina, Native American women, who throughout our nation's history have paved the way for this moment tonight. Women who fought and sacrificed so much for equality and liberty and justice for all, including the Black women who are often, too often, overlooked, but so often prove they are the backbone of our democracy. All the women who have worked to secure and protect the right to vote for over a century, 100 years ago with the 19th Amendment, 55 years ago with the Voting Rights Act, and now in 2020 with a new generation of women in our country who cast their ballots and continued the fight for their fundamental right to vote and be heard. Tonight I reflect on their struggle, their determination, and the strength of their vision to see what can be, unburdened by what has been. And I stand on their shoulders. And what a testament it is to Joe's character that he had the audacity to break one of the most substantial barriers that exists in our country and select a woman as his vice president. First woman in this office, I will not be the last. Because every little girl watching tonight sees that this is a country of possibilities. And to the children of our country, regardless of your gender, our country has sent you a clear message. Dream with ambition, lead with conviction, and see yourselves in a way that others may not, simply because they've never seen it before. But know that we will applaud you every step of the way.
Ah, those are powerful words, Kim. And I think they really are important, because I utterly believe that she not only will not be the last, but I really hope not too long we will actually see a woman for president. And so didn't you find when you heard that speech that was very powerful?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The election and this moment in time can really not be overstated in any way. It's a perfect timing, thank God, if that's who you think, that we finally have a voice of a woman in charge, a full experience of the Constitution being left out of our government in every way, especially a black woman who not only couldn't have the right to her own vote or her own property, but she was property when our country started, black women. And just to see the change is forever shaking. And I heard you say that it's mostly for young women, but I'm just going to give a shout out to the baby boomers and beyond, because young women may not even know how big this moment is, but the sisters and mothers and aunts that brought us here sure do, and I hope it was just as big for them as it really should be. It's an amazing moment for immigrants, for equality for men. We have now our first, what was known as the second lady. Well, we get to reject that whole term now, and we can actually look at equality different by saying, oh, this is our first, second spouse. He just happens to be male. So we're going to be changing things. Small things are huge throughout this whole process. So as they say, wear shoes, because there's tons of broken glass all over, and I celebrate every piece of it.
That is so true. It's amazing, you know, really that history, things can change so fast, even though, you know, it might not seem that, but, you know, our mothers, our grandmothers couldn't have property. You know, that for a while they couldn't be on juries. I mean, we're talking about things that didn't change till the 60s. And, you know, it seems extraordinary. And also, I think as we're looking right now, you know, that thinking of Kamala Harris and all of the real possibilities that is, but I'm looking at what white women did in this last election supporting Trump, and I really have been trying to find a better breakdown, because I'm really getting tired of anybody just saying white women as if that's just a huge class, you know, when we realize, you know, that actually the number of unmarried women, which means, you know, unmarried, never been married, but also that have widowed, are divorced. This is a sizable number, and they are coming from a very different economic structure. They are coming from a very different place of responsibilities and a lifestyle that actually has suppressed their vote and made it difficult. And just to say that white women, you know, voted, and to me, and what did you think of that when you heard and read that, Kim?
Well, first of all, I agree with you that we need to look at this differently. The way I'm looking at it is by every great, I mean, if you put misogyny as the front, which is in every group, men voted more for Trump, a racial group, than their female counterparts did. So misogyny is what men voted for more than any other group. But when you add in racism, the whiter you were as a woman, the more you voted for Trump. So racism and misogyny are alive and well. And it is our job, and by our, I mean me, I'm a white woman, to focus on white women, to engage with them, to talk to them about the inequality, not just abortion, but yes, abortion, about the ERA, about the differences and that we're still facing economic hardship. We're not putting the forefront being, you know, let's talk about the patriarchy and misogyny. We've sort of watered that down some. So, yes, white women absolutely voted more, and it gives me more authority to say, hey, white women, stop telling black women what to do and how to participate in this voting process. It's all the time I see a lot of white progressive women like myself trying to engage and tell black or brown women what to do. And I'm like, hey, hold it. You got to talk to your, we need to talk to our white people who are more likely to listen to us, because black women are organizing and are the backbone right now, carrying this country forward. That's my short answer of it, but misogyny and racism are really well. And although I'm thrilled about the United States direction, the real concern is here in Florida, what we did with this election and what we endorsed. We endorsed more misogyny and more racism than we did for the in the last two election cycles. So.
Yeah, oops, Arlene, go ahead.
Yeah, and it's up to us as white women to also let our black sisters know how much we support them and how much we appreciate what they're doing and how much we're willing to stand up for their rights to be in the whole process.
And yeah, I have felt for a very, very long time that the moral center, whatever moral center there is in this country, is with African-American women, and has been, you know, to survive slavery. You know, I remember talking to the woman from Rutgers I was interviewing her. She was talking about her grandmother, who literally, she had 13 children. She was a slave. And she, all the ones that were still survived, you know, have been sold, et cetera. And she went and she found all of her children. And, you know, it's that kind of strength. And it's not only the strength, it is the fact that they have always believed, in spite of the conditions that they were living under, and they were horrendous, and in many instances still are, they have believed in the possibility. They always kept their eye on the possibility of the prize. And to me, as Heidi Schreck says, and I'm hoping we can get to that, that not just with young people, but I have always looked upon African-American women, that their light is such that, as Heidi says, that it gives me some, and I can come behind in the shadow, you know, gives me some light too, so I can be in the future. But to me, it really has been that. And so I think white women need to listen. You know, I mean, and realize that, you know, I'm also, you know, I'm thinking of so many women right now, just with the economics of the situation. And it was breaking my heart yesterday when I was just reading literally in this area about a female surgeon who cannot go back to work because of the school situation with the kids. And that, in other words, the differences between the economy recovering for women right now, period, and men, is such a gap that we have, as they call it, a she session. And you know, that all of this is thrown in, and you know, it's kind of like the golf, or, you know, the bay. Yesterday we were watching with Etta, and this morning, and that kind of swirling and going over, that's what we have right now.
Absolutely, we do. And I agree with both of your comments about what the role of white women could be. And I like to just encourage to say, yes, how can we help? How can we provide resources, support that is guided and needed? So I think that's a fundamental shift. And it's been happening over, you know, the last decade. You know, black women are the most educated group of people in America. Yet in Florida, working black women make lower than any other dynamic or any other sex and race combination we have. So they. What I also know about my relationships with black women is that my privilege goes. Like, and I know we're about to go into the Constitution, but when RGB died, how it hit me was very different than how it hit my black feminist friends. Because they didn't have the faith that we even had that much safety in the Constitution. They knew more clearly where they stood in this country, where they stand in this country. I mean, they're watching videos like George Floyd all the time. They know more about where we are, where white women are still, you know, we're learning how to see our racism and see the impacts of not only misogyny, but the racism and the colonial misogyny with it. So there's a lot to learn, a lot of conversations to have about this.
Boy, well, did you just make a really important point? You know, that there RBG, and she's been just huge, so important. I mean, really, both she and Sandra Day O'Connor, I mean, but really. And you know, we've been nervously holding our breath and, you know, hoping she keeps doing her planks and all that kind of stuff. But that is so profound that an African-American woman would say, hey, come on. We know that if you don't have whatever you've got at the top, so to speak, and let's face it, when you're talking about Supreme Court, you've got the top. If you don't have a really strong base at the bottom, when a strong wind comes and knocks that branch off, that's it. And if you don't have that base, you have nothing. And that it was a fascinating point you made, Kim. And it's so true. And there we get Thurgood Marshall replaced by Clarence Thomas. And all the machinations. I haven't even gone into them with Biden supporting Clarence Thomas. How important Biden was, really, in Clarence Thomas getting that seat. And that's part of our history. It is part of it. And now we have Amy Barrett replacing RBG. And it's not accidental that it is so comparable. To me, it absolutely is a quick snapshot of what our society is and has been. And yet the Supreme Court is huge. And so we not only have to look at trying to revise and try and, number one, collar and somehow manage COVID, but the economy, but also looking at the fundamentals of the skewering of our whole court system. You know, how drastic is that going to be? And so the challenges can seem absolutely overwhelming. And Kim, you kind of realize that where have all of us been for so many years? Because it couldn't be this bad if we didn't put these kind of leaders in. I think we have fallen down on our democratic duties. It's not easy to have a democracy, and I think we've fallen down.
I agree, and that goes back to that John Lewis statement about it having to take democracy takes action as a verb. And so we really have to engage, and that's what the Republicans have been doing. I mean, I come from a Republican family. My mom voted for Trump in Georgia because she didn't want to change her memory of my dad in their life. So here is a woman whose husband literally died because of the mismanagement of this country and the virus, and yet she's voting patriarchy. She's voting to support that husband of hers. And we have a lot of people like that. But the Tea Partiers took over. They funded a lot of money, Koch brothers did, into the Tea Partiers, and just let people gather and talk about the Constitution and the Bible and underline misogyny all the way. And then it just ramped up when Trump won, and they started funding the Proud Boys, and they started adding on, you know, doubling down with misogyny and adding, forget the Bible, really, let's just talk about supremacy. And so they really started funding these hate groups. The Democrats need to get better at organizing and letting people come together and unite and create a platform for all of us. And that takes time and organizing, and that's what the Democrats have just been outdone by the Republicans time after time here in the South.
Yeah, you mentioned the Constitution, you know, and a lot of us should be rereading it if we've ever read it in the first place. I don't think most of us have. And as you said, actually, that the Koch brothers have financed meetings, you know, with the Tea Party, et cetera, and they're talking about the Constitution, how to do revisions, how to fill in more explicitly some areas that will guarantee, you know, the original writing was to protect the minority and the privileged. I mean, let's face it, that's what it was about. And so Arlene, I know you want to say something, so you go right ahead.
Well, I was just thinking back to how appalled I was when the Hollywood Access tapes came out. And I was so sure that that would do Trump in. And I still feel sure that our black sisters, if there were any of them that were considering voting for Trump, would have been turned off by that enough that they would not have voted for him. And it really disturbs me that so many white women have voted for him in spite of the misogyny.
Well, you know, and Kim, when you texted me earlier, last week actually, about Heidi Sheck and the Constitution, to play what the Constitution means to me, I must admit I really hadn't thought about it. You know, I really didn't know that much about it. I was vaguely aware of it, but that was all, just vaguely. And so, you know, I think that that's what we're really looking at now. And I'm looking at the time, but I think it's worth it. I'm going to play this segment, actually, of Heidi Sheck with Lawrence Tribe, because Lawrence Tribe of Harvard, you know, has really been fighting hard to expose what he calls the invisible Constitution, and if we aren't aware of this and its power, etc. And I think that this little exchange between the two of them will kind of set it up, because I really like to talk about that with you, because I think that's really important. So let's give a listen to that, and then let us continue going into that.
The common thread between what the two of you have said, again, it's that amazing space in the middle of the Venn diagram, which is, I think you both feel this urgent need for people to engage with the Constitution.
Right. Yes.
And that we tend to see it as a kind of, you know, at minimum spectator sport, maybe just this oracular
right.
religious artifact. And I think both of you coming at it, you through Twitter and you through the play, are coming at it in a way. I mean, if you're not following Larry Tribe on Twitter,
you totally follow
then
him.
You should just pull out your phone and do that right now. But it is an amazing thing that I think you're both trying to say, that this kind of passive relationship that Americans have with this document, or maybe more perniciously, this idea that the framers nailed it on the first right. go, that has to be wrong, right.
right? Right. And what I loved so much each time I've seen Heidi's play, I've seen it a couple of times, but I feel as though I've lived it more than twice. First time I saw it was when my 11-year-old granddaughter said, you know, Grandpa, there's this play that I really think you might want to take us to. This was in December, I think, before it was at the Helen Hayes, when it was off Broadway. And I said, well, what's it called? She said, What the Constitution Means to Me. And I had talked to her, I guess, fourth grade class or something about what the Constitution meant. And I thought, this would be fun. I mean, I had no idea what it was about. I had barely read about the play. But when I went with my two granddaughters and with my son and his wife to see the play, what I loved was the engagement with the audience. It wasn't there was nothing inert about it. The play was a dialogue. Even though it was in some ways a monologue, the involvement and engagement of the audience was palpable, and I felt myself sort of merging with that audience. It was a pulsating experience. And what I've always loved about teaching constitutional law was that it also is a kind of dialogue. I've never taught it as though, you know, there's this parchment and we have to dissect it and pull apart the threads and the phrases, though you have to learn how to do that if you're going to do well in litigation. But I've always thought of it as something that students could be engaged in, whether they are, you know, Elena Kagan, Barack Obama. I've had the most amazing luck with amazingly interesting students, but many you've never heard of. It was that dialogue, and to have that come to life in the theater and then on Broadway, and to have someone with Heidi's sensitivity to it and her talent do it has just been a marvelous experience. And she's picked the parts of the Constitution that I love the most. I mean, her love affair with the Ninth Amendment really it's sort of that's absolute sort of, I don't know what to call it for me, but that's where I live. I live in the parts of the Constitution that aren't written down, that are invisible, that have capacity for growth. And I've written a book called The Invisible Constitution. That's what I celebrate. The fact that we know it can't all be written down and that we have to give it life, and that it's a participatory activity. It's a verb, not a noun.
Heidi, that's such a great segue to the question I had for you, which is, you know, this play kind of toggles between your child self, you know, this kind of adorable adolescent who falls in love with this idea that there's a lane for her, there's a conversation, and it comes through the Ninth Amendment and these penumbras and the emanations, and that's really it for you. Is your sort of invitation to be in exactly the dialogue that Larry's describing. And then I think, this is spoiler alert, but like it becomes clear there's not really a place, at least for you as a woman, in those penumbras and emanations. And I guess one of the questions that I had as I was watching is, do you genuinely feel that you today are not in that conversation, or do you feel as though the people who were tasked with figuring out the penumbras, inviting us into the modern era with the Constitution, let you down?
That's an incredible question. Let me start with the Ninth Amendment, because I really did fall in love with that amendment as a teenage girl. I had to prepare every amendment. Well, there were only 26 when I was doing the contest. I had to prepare and learn each one of them. And when I got to the Ninth Amendment, I remember at age, I think I started the contest when I was 14 actually, reading the enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. And after I'd looked up all those words, I was like, oh, this is telling me that I have rights that are not spelled out in this document. What does that mean? What are those rights? How do I find out? Who decides? I just found it to be this, I was also a kid. I was like into science fiction and witches and magic. So it felt like this, a portal, like opening up into this whole other world of rights that I didn't know I had. And I also think, I'm a playwright. So I think, I thought of it, just relating that to being a 15-year-old girl, not knowing who I was yet, trying to, imagine my own future, imagine who I might be one day. This amendment seemed to provide a space to imagine the future, which I think is in fact what it does in the Constitution. So I just became obsessed with that, and then I really became obsessed because of the Ninth Amendment with William O. Douglas, who like grew up near my hometown and dated a woman in my grandma's who lived near my grandma. He dated a lot of women, but so I became really obsessed with him and the way he talked about the penumbra. So the penumbra, as you probably, if you've seen the show, know, or follow Larry, is this, this kind of shadow, essentially. The idea was that you could find these unenumerated rights in the penumbra of other rights. So, for example, I learned when I got a little bit older that Griswold versus Connecticut was decided in part by deciding that that located in the first, fourth, fifth, and some other amendment was the right to privacy, and that this allowed a married couple to use birth control. I started to learn about just all of the ways that the court was able to use this idea of unenumerated rights to gain rights that maybe the founders could never have imagined we might need.
And that's amusing, but Kim Porteous, and again, we're talking to Kim Porteous, and we just heard actually from the 98th Street Y when Dahlia Lithwick had both Heidi Schick. She's the writer and performer of What the Constitution Means to Me with Lawrence Tribe, well-known Harvard scholar, et cetera, and is quite a constitutional expert. And I think that Kim, when you really look at it, as we think right now, the challenges to women's literally their autonomy of their body, that you kind of, when you listen to Heidi and go through some of her things, I think it's a really sad state when actually the Constitution really hasn't applied very well to women, and not only women. And I think this is fascinating. Kim, go ahead.
Oh, absolutely. I completely agree. And I highly encourage everybody to check out both The Constitution Means to Me, and it's free online now. You can find it easily. So it's terrific. But it is important that they bring up the teenager, what Heidi learned when she was a teenager, educating our students. Engagement in civics is the big thing that is missing the most. And because I am the president here of Florida, I must point out that education is completely under attack here in Florida, and this patriotic education languages is already being moved forward in Florida in various ways. And in our next legislative session, they'll try to roll back and take rights away from children and give them to parents, which is treating children more like chattel, with the bills like Parents' Rights Bill. So I think what I love most about this show is not only does it educate people, she's evolved in talking about multiple genders, not just women, but trans and non-binary folks. She makes sure that she puts immigrant and black women front and forefront when she's talking about this. But more than anything is that it talks about the value of educating our youth. That's what really excites me. And she brings it involved. And the disease are out there. They're watching Miss America and seeing how the ERA died and why. They're watching the first black immigrant woman, the daughter of immigrant woman, become vice president. They're seeing the change. And just like with the black women who are being the backbones that we need to support, we need to find ways to make sure that we're supporting those younger generations, not necessarily telling them what to do with it, but supporting them, because I do have more hope that they have learned a painful lesson that will create change for all of us soon.
Yeah, and education is so critical. And you know, I'm thinking of Heidi, and I think it was so great that you can just imagine this 15-year-old girl, you know, learning all about this because she's hoping to get a scholarship for school, et cetera. We all understand that. So she's going around talking about the Constitution Amendment, et cetera, what it means to her. And then as she is older, though, but I'm thinking of, you know, her getting to know, in other words, not only what the Constitution says and what, so to speak, can be denied or delineated, but does it have any responsibilities to protect? And I thought it was fascinating that Heidi got to know the tragic case of this woman whose husband, they were divorced and it was very acrimonious, and he managed to get the kids and he killed their children. And that the courts found that she had no recourse, that, you know, that the police, no one was obligated, so to speak, to protect her. And then it went to the international jurors. I'm not just quite sure. And I think that is fascinating, that obviously we've been kind of sheepish, if you will, and have not expected much and have not demanded much. But, you know, as a woman, I am furious that we are still fighting for the autonomy of our body. Nothing can be much more important. If you don't have autonomy of your body, you can never be a complete human being. But I'm also thinking about the protections, you know, and you know, we're a society that's fascinated by a certain percentage of us with guns, and we're loaded to the teeth with them. And, you know, one person with a semi-automatic gun can do an awful lot of damage. And it's almost like we've been in a kind of a, I don't know what a sleep state we've been in. But to me, if we're not going to wake up now, when are we going to wake up?
Oh, we're not if we don't wake up now. Now is the time. Get up now, everyone. We are awake. Let's learn. Let's learn about communities that don't look like us, that are in the same fight for equality with us, because uniting is going to be the only way through this. And that means learning about people and growing and continuing that. Because I'll tell you what, who also won during this Florida election here was white Republican women. More white Republican women were elected to the House in Florida, and not a single one of those support the ERA.
Really?
They're people who've been litmus tests to be misogynist and continue the legacy of their fathers or their husbands. In several cases, they're direct, have fathers or husbands who were in seats before them. And so we're in really bad shape if we don't wake up. Now's the time.
Yeah,
and we are.
And it's kind of discouraging because you think way back to Alice Paul, and she realized that we needed equal rights. She realized the vote would not be nearly enough. And you know, there has to be more. And I think we have to expect more from politicians than just being able to say, no, I will obstruct. You're not going to get that. It's not going to happen. It's not going to change. You know, that I'm not quite sure how we can flip over that switch, but we have to, in our own sense, demand more. And not just stand and talk about it, but turn those demands actually into plans and into programs. Because, you know, as AOC, and we won't get time to play that, you know, that she was attacked unmercifully by some Democrats saying, don't even mention certain terms. You know, it's because of you that we lost seats in the House, blah, 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 blah. And AOC, you know, said that every single candidate who ran on Medicare for All, that ran on, you know, the need, you know, to have far more economic opportunities and higher wages, et cetera, that every single one of these people that actually ran on those kind of policies, they won. They did fine. You know, that it's not because you folks have a progressive moniker, that you're the one that if you're saying that there needs some certain reforms, that we need to have situations, you know, where if a person's having a mental breakdown, the only recourse is not to have a policeman with a gun. Sometimes you need somebody there that can talk, that can calm this person down so you can have some, for everybody, that you can have some revolution of this that will go forward then to help that person be treated, and that unfortunately all of this is just right there in front of us that we need to correct right now. Kim, are you there? Kim, did we lose you?
I'm here.
Oh, okay, sorry. But I mean, it seems overwhelming, and I'm not trying to overwhelm people, but it's just that any place you look. And I suppose then you approach and you do the things that maybe you know the most about and you care the most about, you know? At least that's a step in, at least that's taking a step forward, don't you think? Kim, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I noticed that your thing was kind of flipping over. And so I was making sure you were there. Okay, Kim, I'm noticing the time. And so we've covered a lot of areas, but you mentioned about education. And you're not in USF Tampa area, but USF is stopping getting a degree. They're thinking of stopping getting a degree in education. They're going to continue their master's program. But what does that say when you were talking about education?
That's ridiculous. We need more teachers, and we need to empower teachers, support teachers. Right now, we need better education than we ever had. But I did want to just jump back to the AOC bit. In Florida, our AOC is Anna Escamani, and she's right here in Central Florida, and she gets just as much kickback as AOC does for doing exactly what you were saying, standing what we need to stand unapologetically for. Autonomy for all of us and health care for all and for our LGBTQ plus community and all of that. So the Democratic Party here has given a lot of pushback. And in Florida, we did lose one of our seats who was a progressive, who was an incredible Debbie Marcella Powell down in South Florida, U.S. Congresswoman, lost her seat. So we can't afford to be conservative here or try to keep abortion out of the subject or keep trans folks' rights out of the subject. We have to unapologetically be pro all of us if we're going to turn anything over, and that includes in education. So we have a lot of repairs to do. And engaging in this legislative session, watching those education bills is absolutely fundamental. We need to be watching how they're going to be attacking teachers and children's rights. In this legislative session, like they did last year with the parental rights bill. And that's not to be confused with parental consent, the abortion bill.
Keep me posted, Kim, and Arlene.
And you'll want to be sure to stay tuned for Radioactivity coming up. Rob is going to have a guest that in some ways strongly relates to what we've been discussing, the author Ruth Ben-Ghiat, and she's the author of Strong Men, Mussolini to Trump.
Ooh.
Ooh. Okay, well, I'm looking at the time. Kim Porteous, you've been so generous with it and all your work, and do keep me posted. You're a treasure here, and we've just, I think this is the time to really do it. So thank you so much. You take care.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank
you. You take care. Bye-bye. And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota Clearwater Community Conscious Radio.
From the sorrow in the streets, the holy places where the races meet, and from the homicide of bitching that goes down in every kitchen to determine who will serve and who will eat. From the wells of disappointment where the women kneel to pray for the grace of God in the desert here and the desert far away. Democracy is coming.